Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales and Sam Jam Packard, today thanking you for making us part of your daily routine. This is the Monday show, and it's a Monday mailbag. The Celtics, in between the third and fourth games of this road trip, coming off a 112-104 win against the Utah Jazz, and considering how poorly this road trip started, I'm impressed at where they are right now, Sam.
Yeah, no, after that first game, I was shocked and not really looking forward to staying up late, but the two very impressive wins without Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder, two great games. And I don't know what it is about the Jazz. The Celtics have played them really well both times they played this year, but I was not expecting them to come away with two victories. Great comeback in Portland, and then just kind of beat the Jazz for 48 minutes last Saturday night, which was impressive. So the Celtics are in a good place. Normally, it's you expect them to struggle on a West Coast road trip like this, but two wins so far, and a winnable game against the Mavericks coming up.
Yeah, the Jazz thing is weird because the Jazz seem like a team that should give them a lot of problems. Athletic, young, a lot of size. The Celtics struggle against those long, young, athletic teams, but here they are, having swept the season series from them. They have an opportunity to beat the Dallas Mavericks, and then I have a real weird feeling about that Philly game back home in between the road games with the Dallas Mavericks and the Chicago Bulls. That first home game back from a West Coast trip, and that's post All-Star game, right? Or am I...
Those games? No, that's next week. That's the final two games.
Those are the final... Okay, right. So that makes it even worse because you're going into the All-Star break. You've got a game against the Bulls on national TV. I think that Philly game is going to be really weird. I don't like that. But we're not getting into that. Today, we're answering mailbag questions. We're getting into the current roster. We're getting into draft picks because everybody's dying to know about the draft. We're getting into possible trades. We're getting into a lot of different things. So let's just dive into that. Let's start with the Utah Jazz game where the topics on Twitter, I'm laughing already looking at the questions. @Dijon_Rondo. Let's just start with this. Marcus Smart has the best... Fuck you, this is my ball steals. Let's just dive right into the questions with that one. He has a steal every game, it feels like, where a guy is just dribbling and he reaches in, he grabs it, and he rips the ball away and says, as @Dijon_Rondo says, fuck you, this is my ball, which is awesome.
Yeah, the best one about this was in reaction to something I tweeted, because in the Jazz game, he managed to do that and then immediately get kicked in the nuts. And he did it all with in one fluid motion and still got the steal, which is kind of – it's the kind of quintessential Marcus Smart. You got to take as much pain as possible when just doing something awesome and contributing to winning. And his performance over the past two games, especially in that Portland game – I know me and Jay talked about it, kind of all the things he did to kind of contribute to winning, but – he was amazing, and his ability to create turnovers just based on, I don't know if it's quickness or strength or a combination of both, but on those FU steals are damn impressive. I feel like maybe the tide's starting to turn on his more national perception. I know he didn't make like the ESPN top 25 under 25 list, but I saw during the Portland game, Matt Moore tweeted that maybe that Marcus Smart is the Celtics Draymond Green, which I thought was a kind of an apt comparison of just kind of the guy who does the dirty work. And then also Kevin Pelton of ESPN was at that Portland game, and he was tweeting a bunch about kind of the how Marcus Smart was impacting winning. So maybe Marcus Smart's reputation is kind of going to finally extend outside just Boston for just how much he does, maybe not on the stat sheet, but how much he does just to kind of make sure his team wins the basketball game.
Yeah, I feel like Marcus Smart has had one hell of a road trip, and he's had this kind of game. And it's hard for me to know exactly still at this point where Marcus Smart truly fits in the Celtics' future. Because on one hand, he's had a lot of success doing all of these little things where he's guarding anybody. And he's ripping the ball away from people, and he's guarding Gordon Hayward, or if he's guarding a power forward somewhere, or a point guard, or somebody. He is a jack of all trades, but then he's also had a lot of success as the Celtics' backup point guard. And I don't know, I honestly don't know with him, whether it's better for him to be more focused, or for him to be more freelance-y type of kind of do everything. But I do know that Marcus Smart has had a hell of a road trip and a nice resurgence, and he had a nice game against the Jazz where he did a little bit of everything, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals. Part of a bench mob that went nuts. They had contributions from everybody. James Young. Let me just mention, by the way, the Isaiah Thomas's son, the way he did James Young dirty, was hilarious. If you didn't see it, I quoted it on RedsArmy.com, but Adam Himmelsbach had the tweet. Isaiah Thomas was ripping off all of the guys on the bench who had great games. He's like, yeah, Rozier, Olynyk, Green, James Young. And Isaiah Thomas's son said, who's James Young? Which is, how do you recover from that? A little kid's like, who's this guy? What are you talking about? I've never heard of him. It's hilarious.
And it's especially just like the cutest little kid ever. And there's no reason why he would have heard about James Young. It just shows that Isaiah Thomas spends zero time talking about James Young, because he hasn't really done anything except for, I remember he had one good game against the Pacers. And then that's got hurt with a little hip thing, and he needed to step up, and we got the best James Young game of the season.
Yeah, that was great. Kelly Olynyk, though, was the biggest contributor off the bench. 19 points, 7 rebounds, a couple of big defensive stands. I know you're a big fan of the positional defense. He had that principle of verticality where Rudy Gobert went up, and he went straight up. And in a lot of instances, might have been called for a foul, but he went straight up. Gobert was going into him, initiated the contact. They didn't call it. And great defensive play by Kelly Olynyk. So Olynyk was a big reason why the Celtics were able to build a huge lead against the Utah Jazz. And this brings us into the current crop of Rain and Jays questions on Twitter with the hashtag Rain and Jays, no G, Rain and Jays. And at Bo Brady's asks, do you think that the Celtics should prioritize extending Kelly Olynyk as he is an elite backup big man? Now, I'm not sold on the elite backup big man thing quite yet, but I think he has the skill set to be a very important kind of player in the NBA. But here's the problem. If the Celtics truly are going to pursue a max free agent, and if they're truly trying to pursue a guy that will take upwards of 30% of their cap this summer, then Kelly Olynyk needs to go away. They need to rescind his rights, along with Amir Johnson going away, and Jonas Jerebko, and Tyler Zeller not picking up his option. They need Olynyk to go away. So if they prioritize Kelly Olynyk, and because he's a restricted free agent, if they prioritize him as somebody to re-sign, then we know that they're not going after, or they don't feel like they can get, a max free agent. So do I feel like they should prioritize that? No, I don't personally, because if, with the caveat, that's in pursuit of a max free agent. And if they don't think they can sign that type of guy, then I will change my opinion and say, then they should bring him back. If they don't think they're going to need all that cap space to bring in a max free agent, and if they have traded or done whatever and he's still an option to re-sign, then yes, I would like to re-sign him, because I think he can do a lot of positive things. And I think I'm more willing to accept some of his downfalls, and I think some of the lack of aggression can be kind of worked out of him over the course of time.
You said basically all the points I wanted to hit on, but the key word in the question is prioritize. By no means should they prioritize Kelly Olynyk. There's a reason they've been building max cap space. Olynyk is not subject line number one at all in the offseason. But doesn't mean I'm wouldn't be open if they were to Blake Griffin, because he's a very, very good functional role player. I think the market has kind of come down a little bit from when everyone's getting those crazy contracts, because people have much less cap room. So bringing Kelly Olynyk back on a team-friendly deal maybe is definitely something I'd be interested in, because he's quite valuable, as we saw last night against the Jazz. When he plays the five, he was really able to neutralize Rudy Gobert, because Gobert's the best when he's this rim protector. But if he has to guard Olynyk all the way out to the three-point line, then he's not staying in the paint. So I'm a big fan of Kelly Olynyk, but prioritize is the operative word there, and it's not something I'm going to do if I'm Danny Ainge.
Yeah, I agree. That's not the top priority. I think what Danny Ainge is going to try to do is tender the qualifying offer and see how the restricted free agent market pans out. If somebody wants to come along and vastly overpay for Kelly Olynyk, then they'll do what they did, basically, not the exact same situation, but similar. They'll do what they did with Evan Turner and say, thank you very much for your service. We appreciate what you did for us. Go get overpaid somewhere else. But in reality, if they can get Olynyk while achieving some of the other goals, and the other goals are the bigger priority, a guy like Olynyk coming off of the bench, or maybe even starting at some point, his ability as a stretch five really opens things up. And to have him out there as a guy that you need to respect from three. Now, we can get caught up in the fact that he up fakes too much and whatever, and I certainly do sometimes, I will admit that. But even if he up fakes sometimes, that's because a guy is closing out on him. And when a guy is closing out on him, that means that space for somebody else. Now, he should take some of those shots that he doesn't take, and I think lately he's been more aggressive, but it still means he's a threat out there from three, and floor spacing is a premium at that position in today's NBA. So for him to be a threat at that position, at the five, that is something that is highly valued in today's NBA. And you can sit there and say, what if we overpaid him and he doesn't have that production? But him being on the floor and opening things up for a guy like Isaiah Thomas, that's worth the money. So with Olynyk, it's going to be some of the stuff that's not in the in the stat sheet. But I think we both agree that there are other things that we need to prioritize. And Olynyk could be a thing, a guy that goes if we need to get other higher priority players in to Boston. Okay, next, we're going into some trade talk. Ryan Kennedy at Keeping Up With K. What percent chance do you give the Celtics of standing pat at the trade deadline? I think it's a very high percentage that they stand pat at the trade deadline. I'm going to say it's about like 80% because I don't think the collective bargaining agreement is fully understood. And I think teams are going to kind of wait to see how this Supermax thing kind of plays out. So I think some of what the Celtics were hoping to do this summer might not be available.
Yeah, no, I would go even higher than that. I think it's closer to 90%. I just don't see a deal that really makes a lot of sense for the Celtics because they want that max cap room and they're going to have to do some – even if they stand pat, they're still going to have to do some tricky things that are try and get to that 7 to 9 year veteran max level cap space. So I just don't see them doing anything that's going to risk that. And there's not a lot of players on the market – save maybe Paul Millsap, who I just don't think is going to be traded, or Serge Ibaka, who have those kind of those one-year deals. And I just don't think Serge Ibaka, he hasn't done anything in this first year in Orlando. I just don't think he puts you over the edge. So I think the Celtics are feeling pretty good about where they are right now. They had a bunch of issues with rebounding, and it seems like over the past 10 games they've been doing a much better job with that. I imagine their defense is going to get a little bit better when Avery Bradley returns. So I don't think there's that pressing need to go out and do anything. They're sitting pretty right now with a 2.5 games back of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Without a deal that really puts them over the edge of the Cavs, I don't see a reason to make a trade.
Right. So then the next question comes from at Max the Pimp with number one for an I. So
Max the Pimp.
You know, good for you, Max. So is Thomas Butler, that's Jimmy Butler, Smart, Ibaka, and Horford good enough to win the title in 17 or 18? Because that is gettable. So I don't know if that is entirely gettable, as Max believes, because I think Chicago is really going to be asking for a lot with Jimmy Butler. And I think, look, they're going to be able to get rid of Rondo one way or the other. His contract is sheddable. And they've got Dwayne Wade, who I think is understanding now more of his role. And they've got Butler, who is a superstar player. And I think Chicago might feel like they can kind of play those guys into something that will be a team that you can build with. So to get Butler and blow it all up, I think you really have to wow Chicago, and I'm not sure Danny Ainge is going to try to wow Chicago with that. He'll ask, I'm sure, and he might be able to get Ibaka, but we talked about Ibaka on the last show, me and Jay King. Getting Ibaka there, Orlando is going to want a little bit more, just some kind of sweetener type of deal. I don't think that Danny Ainge is looking to get any of those things. So two answers to that question. One, I don't think that's as gettable as you think, Max. And two, I don't think that's necessarily a championship team. Isaiah Thomas, Jimmy Butler, Marcus Smart, Serge Ibaka, and Al Horford. That doesn't do it for me. That doesn't get them past Cleveland. So two different reasons for me to say no to that question.
It's gettable. Yeah, it's gettable if you want to unleash the entire war chest and like give up both Brooklyn picks and maybe some other future firsts and then some young players or maybe Avery Bradley. But it doesn't – like, one, that lineup doesn't – I don't think that lineup makes you better than the Cavaliers or better than the Warriors this year. I just – and I guess you can say just absolutely going for it. But it just it feels like it would be pushing all your chips in the middle of the table for not necessarily the best hand. It just – I think it's Max the Pimp is coming up short on this one. I don't think it was the best idea.
Now, okay, so sorry, Max. Just don't think that's going to be the thing that happens. Okay, Mauricio Green at Mauricio Green BR. Who is the better fit for the Celtics, Gordon or Griffin? So Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin? I'll let you go, Sam.
A better fit. That's a tough question because if you put either of them into the lineup, it kind of immediately makes it so Al Horford's your starting center. And Al Horford's always said that he'd rather play power forward. We know he's not the best rim protector in the world. So it's basically you either have Blake Griffin as your power forward and Jay Crowder as your small forward, or Hayward as your small forward and Crowder as, I guess, your starting power forward.
Well, let me interrupt you. Are we assuming that this is via free agency or trade?
I was assuming free agency because I don't think that any trade is going to occur with those two teams, but we both being in it right now.
So okay, I agree with that. Okay, continue.
So with that being said, it feels like I think Gordon Hayward is a hard question, but I just remember watching Blake Griffin again that game in the Garden, I think it was last weekend, and he just didn't look very healthy. So I'm kind of more concerned about Griffin's injury. And Gordon Hayward's a very good player, and in terms of working with what Brad Stevens wants to do, I feel like if you got him in here, there's less room for just like a colossal injury ruining the trade. I feel like with Blake Griffin, you could bring him in. He may be kind of better and there may be higher potential, but I feel like it's more risky to bring in a guy like Blake Griffin than it would be Gordon Hayward. So I would lean towards Gordon Hayward.
I would also lean towards Hayward. As much as I like Blake Griffin, and I think Blake Griffin is very underrated generally, I agree about the injury issues, and I think pushing Al Horford, Griffin would definitely push Al Horford into the center spot, which I don't like. And that's something that I was on the Comcast Sportsnet podcast a couple days ago with Kyle Draper and Sherrod Blakely, and we had this entire discussion. And I just think that Al Horford's lateral quickness has been compromised at this point to a level where I don't think him in today's NBA, I don't think him at the five is going to be what we need. I like Al Horford as a four. I like what he's done with this team. I think his impact has been amazing. I don't want to ruin that by putting him in a position where he's going to fail so much defensively. And I think putting him at the five, as this NBA progresses forward, I think putting him at the five against guys like Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns, no, that's not – I don't want him there. So I'd rather find another option to play that position. So I think Gordon – now, the question with Gordon Hayward, do you think he could play a big two guard or is he just going to be a three? Can you start Isaiah Thomas, Gordon Hayward, Jay Crowder, Al Horford, and some center? Because he's 6'8". And could he guard that position?
I don't really think that Gordon Hayward can be a starting shooting guard just because I think it's defense is the biggest issue. You have Isaiah Thomas, a lot of the times you want to get him off the primary ball handler because of his defensive issues. That would mean putting Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley take a lot of responsibility now. So I think you would sacrifice too much of that kind of perimeter speed for it to really be feasible long term. It's like a lineup you can experiment with. I think if you bring in someone like Hayward or Griffin to play along Crowder, you're basically committing to going small. There is no kind of – I don't think you can get Hayward and Griffin and a five. It just doesn't make sense to me there.
Yeah. That Gordon thing is going to be really interesting because – Do they sign him and play him a little bit out of position, or do they sign him and put Jay Crowder on the bench, or do they sign him and push Jay Crowder to the four and Al Horford to the five? I don't think any of those options are great. I think they're all kind of flawed. So Gordon over Griffin, in some respects, yes. But, man, it's all messy. It's all messy. Okay, at Max Ubinas, if the Celtics decide they really don't have a shot at beating the Cavs, should they seriously consider trading Isaiah Thomas? That is a holy shit question. Because they got Isaiah for one more year at the best contract in the NBA. There's no way that they could trade him for the value that he is worth, because he's paid so little. To trade him for somebody that's worth what he's worth. So let's just say they're never going to trade him for Kyrie Irving, but Kyrie Irving makes a ton of money, or any of these guys, like Damian Lillard makes a ton of money. Those guys, to make a trade for a player at that level, you need to make a trade for a player who makes that level of money. No one else is on a contract like Isaiah's on. And so to trade Isaiah, to bring back the level of player to match the talent, you have to send out so much salary that you've ruined a lot of the other plans that you're trying to make. So to me, Isaiah Thomas is essentially untradeable for that reason. And I understand the concept in theory that you've got a guy who's doing all of these things and maybe he can get you a haul, but he makes like $6.5 million a year and he's worth almost $20 million a year, and you can't just send him out and bring back a bunch of assets like you think you would. You have to actually send him and a lot of assets out to bring back what you think, and that ends up being a pretty even trade. So there's no scenario, there's literally none, in which I expect the Celtics to trade Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, you have to think about what the target is, because I think for stars like Paul George or Jimmy Butler, those teams are going to want to rebuild with kind of the young picks or net picks or Jaylen Brown. There's not a lot of star for star trades. People in the league don't really need teams in the league don't really need point guards right now. It just, there's no imaginable trade that makes sense. And you don't trade a guy who's putting up 30 points a game and is easily your team's most valuable player. It's just, I understand that you might not be in directly challenging for a championship this year, but that doesn't mean you blow it up entirely. I don't know. I don't see the logic in that one.
Yeah. But no, I get it. I get the logic a little bit, but there's just nothing. There's nothing that really makes sense. So the short answer is no. They should not seriously or unseriously or in any way consider trading Isaiah Thomas. But continuing with this trading an established guy, Mason Daly at Mace_JD. You think Avery Bradley not playing could be a way to keep him healthy for a trade? That's something that I think naturally creeps up. He's got that Achilles injury. Under normal circumstances, I can see a team being very careful with an Achilles injury. Now, the Celtics are winning. They're 2.5 games out of the first seed. They're 3 games up on the Washington Wizards now, 2.5 games up on Washington, who has now snuck into the third seed with Toronto sliding into fourth. I understand that Avery Bradley being hurt and them being cautious might make it seem like, look, be careful. Let's not worry about let's not risk him being injured in case he aggravates that injury. We want to put him into a trade package. He's a very valuable guy for a win now team. If let's just pretend the Los Angeles Clippers decide that they want to get into some sort of Carmelo Anthony talks, and Avery Bradley becomes a third team kind of player that slides in, and the Celtics can get. Maybe Danny Ainge has a different opinion. Maybe he does like Blake Griffin. I understand that. I understand that mentality, but I don't think that's necessarily the reason why he's not playing. I think with an Achilles injury, having had Achilles problems myself, I understand how lingering they can be. If you do not take care of your Achilles, and if you do not make sure they are 100%, you just don't risk it. And the Celtics came out, and if they beat the Dallas Mavericks, they will have a 3-1 road trip. That is something that they should be happy with. And there is some talk that they could have maybe had Avery Bradley back for that Dallas game. I think they're just being really, really, really careful with him. So I'm not reading too much into it, although I really do understand why people might think that.
Yeah, I agree with you that I'm not reading into the injury into maybe a reason for him trading, but if they do make a trade this year and deal away an actual piece, Avery Bradley makes the most sense about kind of anyone to be dealt. I feel like, and this is something that Sam Sheehan on Celtics Reddit wrote a long post kind of about how Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas have been really surpassed Avery Bradley in the lineup, and maybe we've seen that with how successful the Celtics have been with him out. But in 2 years, Thomas, Bradley, and Smart's contracts are all up. You're probably only going to pay two of those guys. Avery Bradley, like you said, he definitely has value for a contender, so it would make sense for him to be the deal, maybe package him with some picks. But I don't think it's necessarily him. He is being held out because of it. Because kind of, if I was a team, I think you'd want to see him be playing and be healthy before you decided to trade for him. So I don't know. I'm not reading too much into it, but I do buy that if anyone would get traded, at kind of out of the core, Avery Bradley makes the most sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think a team. It depends on, I think, which team you're trading to. Now, today, the Denver Nuggets traded Yusuf Nurkic to Portland for Plumlee. And so I was thinking that Denver might be a team that would be looking for a longer-term thing. They might be a team that would look for more Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown in this situation. But looking at the guards, more Marcus Smart. But if we're talking about that fantasy Los Angeles Clippers deal, they want somebody who's more win now. It's Avery Bradley. Of course, that's a guy that Doc Rivers likes. He knows what Avery Bradley's about. So I don't think, like, Doc Rivers would never, but I think he would prefer Avery Bradley over Marcus Smart, where other teams would prefer Marcus Smart over Avery Bradley. So it's just a matter of who you're trading to. So again, I understand the concept of keeping a guy healthy just in case. I just think the Celtics are being very cautious. So that being said, let's move on. Now we're getting into a series of questions about the Celtics stashes. A couple of things here. Ati Shepard, can Gershon Yabusele join the team this season? Contractually, yes. He has the ability to join the Celtics this season. The Chinese league ends before the NBA season ends, and he could, but the Celtics are maxed out on cap space roster spots, so they would have to waive like a James Young to make that happen. So that answers that. I don't think Gershon Yabusele will join the team. He can, but the Celtics would have to waive somebody to do that. Okay, next question. Patrick's 1591. Do you see Ante Zizic being our starting center next year? If not him, then who? So, Sam, I guess the question here is, have the Celtics next year gotten to a point where they have either traded or drafted or signed somebody where they need a starting center. We talked about this a couple minutes ago. Do you think Ante Zizic could be the guy that fills that starting center role while everything else kind of plays itself out?
I think if all things go extremely well for Ante Zizic's career in the NBA, he could maybe end the year as the starting center of the Celtics, but I think it would be incredibly kind of reckless and just expecting way too much of the Celtics to have a guy like be your starting center in his very first year in the NBA, especially when you're expecting to contend and be very good. I know he's putting up great stats, but it's still in the kind of Euro leagues. It's not like we have no idea how well he translates to the NBA. So maybe if he plays really well after coming over next season, he kind of plays his way into the starting lineup. But I don't think that Danny Ainge wants to head into the season with him being the starting center.
Yeah, I don't know what next season will bring. He seems to be playing very well in Turkey, and I think he'll have an opportunity. He's really motivated to come on over. And I think it really depends on whether the Celtics really do make a move for that next big star. And a guy like Yabusele or a guy like Zizic, I mean, a starting center, I don't know. But if the Celtics do get a guy to play alongside Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas, and now you've got stars or established core 1, 2, 3, 4, Zizic could be that fifth guy, that center that we're talking about. That is he, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and get a trade for a guy like Biombo? Are you going to get like a search? No, you're looking for a serviceable kind of five. So I can see a scenario where the Celtics have built up enough of a superior core 1 through 4 and have confidence in their bench where you can start a guy like Zizic at the five. So I think it's possible. At JBales96 ask, is it safe to say Jordan Mickey's days as a prospect slash asset are over? Would you like to have him on next year's roster? Sam, do you want to start on this? Or
I think it may be Jordan Mickey, that his time with the Celtics may be drawing to a close. I mean, imagine he may be kept around just in case, but it feels like with Zizic probably coming over, with Gershon possibly coming over, those guys feel like they have more upside, and we want to see what they want to like can do in the NBA. And Jordan Mickey really hasn't shown those flashes. He's that quadruple A player who can dominate the D League but doesn't do it in the NBA. So I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, this could be his last season. But so, because he's really hasn't shown any, he hasn't taken a step to make him more of an NBA player.
Yeah, I think he is going to have an opportunity. He's going to go through the summer league, and he's going to go through training camp. And if he doesn't win a spot halfway through training camp, they will cut him, and they'll give him a chance to hook on with another team. But he's not done as of now. I think they think highly of him because he does so well in the D League. I think they just want him to maybe take some steps forward. There's no reason that he couldn't coexist with those guys. No reason why you can't keep him on the bench and have him be a bench player with those guys. But if they don't think he will be a contributor in a 1 through 10 capacity, then I think he will go away. So the answer to the question is, it's not safe to say his days as a prospect or asset are over, but I think they are maybe winding down. Okay, let's get to the draft. Questions about the draft, which I think all of my answers are going to be the same. But Brian Mick617, I see what you did there with the area code. Fultz for Butler or George? No. Look, if you're saying that, is that a trade scenario?
I think so. It's basically giving up the number one pick, which everyone already assumes is going to be Markelle Fultz, even though they only have a 25% chance of getting the pick. I think that's what he's asking.
Yeah. I would – okay, look. Paul George is a superstar. Jimmy Butler is a superstar. There have been a lot of guys that people have been going nuts over, even in the past few drafts. Think about the past few drafts and how many guys people have gone – they've lost their minds over, and now they're like, eh, whatever. People lose their minds over college players, and then they move on. So if – maybe Fultz will be a superstar someday. I don't know. But for Jimmy Butler or Paul George, for me, yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that because that means – we're winning now, and I'm not waiting for Fultz. I'm not waiting to see what he becomes. So that's my answer.
Yeah, I have to agree. You're hoping if you draft Fultz that he turns into someone with the ability of Jimmy Butler and or Paul George. Also, if you draft Fultz, you have all this kind of guard questions with someone's got to go. I feel like George and Butler kind of make more sense with the core of the Celtics, with that being Thomas and Horford.
Yeah, so like it just really depends on who what direction the Celtics are going in. But like, look at D'Angelo Russell was supposed to be like the guy. You know, you got Karl-Anthony Towns and the Lakers got D'Angelo Russell, and everybody's like, "Oh, wow, the Lakers got Russell." And now people are like, "Eh, you know, whatever." Is anybody going nuts that the Lakers got Russell? Does anybody think that Russell is going to lead the Lakers to the promised land? No. So guys that come out of college that people lose their goddamn minds over, they don't necessarily translate to the NBA. And then I will say that guys that come out of college that no one gives a shit about, Isaiah Thomas, become stars in the NBA. So nobody knows. And for me, I would rather take the known entity. So if the question is, do I trade this year's number one pick for Paul George? Hell yes. Jimmy Butler? Yes. I will work that out. I will work that out. Because in 3 or 4 years, even if Fultz becomes a star, maybe by then we will have won a championship, and that makes it all better. So, okay, moving on. It's at Celtics Bar Fights. Ball or Jackson if the C's don't get the first pick? And who goes if the Celtics get that top at that top pick? Who goes if that pick is kept? I don't know. I really don't know. At this point, I'm not focused on the draft. I'm really not focused on the draft. You guys are much more focused on the draft than me. Let's get through March. Let's get through workouts. Let's get through interviews. Let's figure things out. There's so many things that we don't know. We just don't know. So I really do, honestly, I'm not trying to be wishy-washy. I really try to move from a position of knowing as much information as possible. So you want to ask me in June who I think we're going to draft? Fine. It's February. I don't know what's going to happen. So I need to see how these guys react under pressure. I need to see how these guys react in the tournament. And not that I think that the tournament is the thing, but it's pressure, and that tells you a little bit more about a player. So I just kind of want to see more information.
No, I completely agree. The only, I think, college basketball play I've seen this year was Lonzo Ball hitting a deep three against Oregon the other day. But other than that, I have not watched any college basketball. So all the information I have is basically just from when Jay King has interviewed either Kevin O'Connor or Sam Vecenie or other people, other draft experts. So I know as much as the reigning Jays public right now. So I don't think I can even pretend to give an informed opinion about who the Celtics should pick.
But even so, like there it's not even that. It's more about just kind of, I think, waiting and seeing, because and from my perspective, my personal perspective, sitting here and saying, am I going to make a call right now on a guy? I'm not comfortable doing that. I'm not comfortable being on record making a call about a guy in February when I know how this goes in the NBA. I just know that things like Alonzo Ball, like, okay, a lot, like, when you have a weird jumper like that, when you have some sort of weird, crazy hitch in your game that you succeed in spite of in college, that's a big red flag for me. When you have a reputation for being kind of lax, that's a big red flag for me, because when you can get by on your talent in college, that doesn't necessarily mean you can get by on it in the NBA. So there are guys right now that are doing really, really well in college, but I don't give a shit about their success in college, because that does not mean a whole lot for the NBA. You need to look at what is translatable. And if you look at somebody with a weird, crazy hitch in their jumper, is that gonna translate against NBA talent? So I need to see a guy like that in a maybe combine situation or through some sort of workouts, which means that if I'm an agent, I'm going to keep him way out of that situation. So I'm not really comfortable with a lot of these questions at this point. There's so many unanswered questions that I'm not going to go on record and say, this is the guy that's going to be best for this for the future. That's just not that to me, it's not feasible. Okay, well, let's run through some more of these. Assuming the Celtics draft Baller Fultz, let's just go with that. Who's the odd man out? Smart, Bradley, or Rozier? What does it mean for Abdel Nader? If the Celtics, let's just pretend that they draft one of these point guards, then I think they do have to make a subsequent move, and they have to go out and they have to find a buyer. That means what? Who's the odd man out? Smart, Bradley, Rozier? It depends on whoever is trading for him. So at Patrick's 1591, it just, to me, depends on who's trading for him. I don't think that affects Abdel Nader at all.
No, Abdel Nader is kind of the backup wing. He's not a guard at all, really. So I don't think, maybe he'll get a shot next year if Gerald Green doesn't kind of come back. But I think Bradley may be the odd man out, just for the kind of the things we mentioned earlier. He kind of is the guy who would make the most sense to be traded, just because of all their contracts. But I know it's really dependent on kind of what's being offered.
Okay, so that covers the draft. Let's get into some weird hypotheticals. If Isaiah Thomas wasn't on the roster, asks at NL Graham 1. Well, I don't know why you would want to know the answer to this, but would they make the playoffs? I will say that they would, because I think even without Isaiah Thomas, the Celtics are better than the Detroit Pistons, or at least as good as the Charlotte Hornets. And the Charlotte Hornets are a game away. And so I think even without Isaiah Thomas, with Marcus Smart as your point guard and Terry Rozier backing you up, I think they are at least a fighting for the eighth seed kind of team.
Yeah, no, if I mean, they wouldn't have the kind of star power, but and definitely their scoring would take a hit. But I feel like they'd be one of the scrappiest teams in the league. And the defense, everyone talks about how kind of the team's defense is better when Isaiah's not on the court. So, well, if you expand that out for the entire season, and you're starting Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Horford, and Amir Johnson, I think that would be a pretty solid defensive team. And I think they would be able to scrap around, and they would be right in the thick of things. I mean, for right now, the Miami Heat, who just went on the craziest winning streak of a bottom feeder team in a while, they're only a game and a half out. So I think they'd be right in the mix of that Bulls, Pistons, Hornets, Heat, Bucks, just kind of the East mediocrity. But they have Isaiah Thomas, and he's scoring 30 points a game. So that's a reason why they're the second seed in the East. It's a good thing we don't actually have to see what would happen.
Right. At FunBen123. I really like that Twitter handle, FunBen123. Are the Celtics a lock for the top four? I just booked flights from Boston to Boston from Australia for round one. Dates, I'm assuming, are games 1 and 2 in Boston. Ben, have fun in Boston. They are a lock for the top four.
Yeah, I think so basically they would have to get leapfrogged right now by the Wizards, Raptors, and the Hawks. And I can see situation where maybe one of those teams do it. The Wizards are playing great basketball lately. I mean, the Raptors, if they get back to form, could kind of do that. But I just don't see a situation when all three of those teams would all of a sudden just play that much better in the last half of the season than the Celtics. So, Ben, welcome. Have a great time in Boston. And I think you're good with those tickets.
Yeah. Look, I'll put it to you this way. The Wizards are 9-14 on the road. So they've played a very home-heavy, they've played a weak schedule this month. They're on fire, sure, but I think they're going to come back down to earth. So I agree. Book those Boston hotel rooms, baby. Okay. At Nick Packard, any relation?
Direct. Older brother.
Older brother. Nick Packard asks, or not even asks, fact, he says, if you aren't taking your free throws underhanded, you really don't care about winning. At Nick Packard.
Story behind this tweet, he texted me that exact phrase and said, you need to talk about this on the next podcast. And I said, if you want me to talk about this on the next podcast, you better tweet it at me and use Raining Jays. I think he's absolutely right. If you're a guy like a DeAndre Jordan who's struggling, shooting like 55%, and you don't try the kind of grandma style, you're not a winner, and you're not on my team. I don't care about the embarrassment. It works.
I will do anything. Look, guys will sit there and tell you, I will do anything to win. If you're shooting 50% or less from the free throw line, and you are saying, I will do anything to win, then you better be willing to try those underhanded free throws. There's no shame in that game. If you can do it, if you can perfect it, just put it in there, man. All you got to do is put it in the hole. It's like the Happy Gilmore. Are you too good for your home?
Just go home.
All right. Let's see. Other notes as we wrap up the show. Nurkic and a first rounder went to Portland for Plumlee. Your thoughts, Sam Packard?
I was shocked that the Nuggets had to throw in a first rounder too, just to get like Nurkic off the team. I would have thought that it seemed like they're playing too much just for Miles Plumlee. I know Portland people they would love Miles Plumlee and talk about how he has this triple double potential, but I just doesn't make any sense to me why the additional first rounder had to be added. Maybe I'm just kind of had a poor read on the market, but I was very shocked to see that.
I was also shocked. I thought it would have been the other way around, but apparently the thought is that Nurkic is not as good as I think he is. I think he can be really good. And I think for Portland, look, you get out of having to pay Plumlee all of that money, because he's going to be paid a lot of money. You get Nurkic and a first rounder, and now they've got three first rounders in this draft. It's a pretty nice position to be in for Portland, and considering how their season has gone, to have McCollum, Lillard, now Nurkic. And look, as much as people want to get down on guys like Alan Crabb and Myers Leonard, I know you're not a Myers Leonard kind of guy. It's fine. I think those guys can be solid. I think a lot of it has to do with the money. When you get paid a ton of money, you have a lot of pressure on you. But once you can get past that, and I think this might be a lost season for them, but you add a bunch of young players to a very talented core. I think Portland is due for a bounce back next year. So I love this trade for Portland. You avoid the tax, you avoid having to pay Plumlee all that money. You get a really, really solid, I think, solid center, a good starting center, I think, for the future. I think he's better than a lot of people think, and you put him in a good situation like this, he'll be okay. So good for the Blazers. I like the Blazers. I think the Blazers are one of those teams in the NBA that I can't possibly dislike. It's like them, the Spurs. It's nothing to hate. Okay, last thing on this list, KD and the Cupcake. KD the Cupcake goes back to OKC. Man, what an anticlimactic mess that was. I mean, fans in Oklahoma City can do what they want, but I really want the fans in Oklahoma City to understand that you stole the Seattle Sonics, and to be pissed off that KD left when you stole another city's team, that's irony. I think there's a little bit of comeuppance here, and I love OKC fans. I think you're great. There's nothing to dislike about Oklahoma City, but you all got to understand that you really are the beneficiary of Clay Bennett and Stern screwing over the city of Seattle and taking the Sonics away. So when a superstar decides he's going to leave your city, you really can't be that pissed off. You really can't. I mean, you can, but you got to understand history and know your place.
Yeah, no, it was disappointing in the game, but it was just amusing the coordination of hate the Oklahoma City had with the cupcake stuff. I saw like a thing at the Buffalo Wild Wings in Oklahoma City where they like taped his jersey to the ground and said like wipe your feet here. Just all around good stuff. Andre Roberson getting into it with him. But the thing I really liked was Steph and Draymond taking the cupcake shirts and then wearing them during their postgame.
That was awesome.
That's just ultimate that was great. Beef, and that's what made it just amazing for me. So I really wanted to bring that up because that's exactly how you handle that situation. That's hilarious.
Yes, that is good. That is good. You go out there, you beat their ass, and then you wear the cupcake shirts. I think that's the exact way to handle it. And as much as I like Russell Westbrook, I think showing up in that Beeman jersey and then going out and dropping 11 turnovers, come on. So, all right. That's a good show. I think it's a place to – I think we're in a good place to stop this show. That was a long show. Thank you, everybody, for your questions with the hashtag #BrandonJays. Thanks, everybody, for listening on a regular basis, Monday through Friday. We're here for you on a daily basis, so you can put us on in the car, to work, from work, at work. I don't care if you listen to us at work. That's fine. We're cool with that. You know, just I won't tell your boss if you don't say anything. So subscribe if you haven't subscribed, if you've joined us somehow through some link or through some friends. Thank that friend because they did you a favor. And spread the gospel because we're a really good show. And rate us 5 stars to prove that. So we're back after the that's Monday. Yeah, we're back after the Mavericks game. And hopefully the Celtics can polish off this road trip with a win and continue their march towards maybe the top seed. They're going to play the Cavaliers. Maybe the Celtics play the Cavaliers in March for the top seed. If they do, we'll talk about it here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.